The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of The Pretty Girl and the Seven Jealous Women features images of drowning, assault, and violence against children. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Akeem was cold. It was not just the water swirling all around her. It was in her blood, her bones. She desperately tried to move, to shake herself free, but thick mud climbed up her body and pulled her further down. When she stood in the river, the water had only reached her chest. Now, somehow, she couldn't even see the surface. An intense pressure began to push against her ribs. She needed air. She needed to breathe, but she couldn't move. Akeem's body began to stiffen. She tried to thrash against the mighty river, but it was no use. Her arms and legs began to freeze. With the last of her force, she reached up for the disappearing surface. Darkness clouded her vision as the rest of her body sank into the riverbed. But one single noise cut through the rushing, swirling water. In her final moment, Akeem swore she could hear her friends laughing. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. This week, we're telling the story of The Pretty Girl and the Seven Jealous Women. This tale comes from the Abibio people of southeastern Nigeria. It follows a beautiful young woman who's betrayed by her jealous friends and her family's brutal plot for revenge. To this day, many Abibio people live near the Cross River area of Nigeria, like they have for generations. In fact, they're reputed to be the earliest inhabitants of southern Nigeria, and their stories are often just as ancient as the community itself. The Pretty Girl and the Seven Jealous Women is likely no exception, although since Abibio storytelling is a mostly oral tradition, it's hard to pinpoint exactly when the tale first emerged. What we do know is that the tale was first written down in 1910 in a book titled Folk Stories from Southern Nigeria. The text was compiled by Elphinstone Darrell, who served as British District Commissioner of South Nigeria, and it was far from a neutral interpretation of indigenous storytelling. The book was part of a larger imperial effort to control and colonize indigenous Nigerians through their culture, and that editorial goal is clear in the text. For example, in Darrell's version of The Pretty Girl and the Seven Jealous Women, a spiritual leader casts lots, a practice primarily from Judeo-Christian mysticism. Furthermore, Darrell conflates different aspects of Abibio spirituality into the umbrella term of juju. In reality, the Abibio people had a variety of terms to refer to the spirits and magic in their stories. But even through the fog of imperial interpretation, the tale of The Pretty Girl and the Seven Jealous Women provides a clear warning against the evils of envy. It also tells a story of familial love, community justice, and the dangers that plague those arenas, too. Mother and father did not have much. Their plot of land was small. Their few chickens and lone goat were not large or plump. They didn't have money for fine clothes or jewelry, but none of that mattered because they had been blessed with the most beautiful child. Their daughter was born as gentle rains quenched the parched land, and flowers began to bloom. The birds sang songs for her, and the winds blew away the heat. Mother and father named her Akeem for the gorgeous springtime, and as a small child, she proved she was indeed the blessed daughter of joyful spring. Little Akeem loved to play in the garden, and she even loved to help around the house. She loved the way her parents looked at her after she completed her chores, and the way her father said to her, "You are our perfect child." As she grew into a teenager, however, Akeem started to feel the double edge of her parents' adoration. Her love of lying out in the garden, and even her satisfaction at a chore well done, started to lose their cheerful glow because she worried that somehow, somewhere, she might make a mistake. Perfect, her father called her. Beautiful, a gift. But what if one day she wasn't? Her stomach tied itself in knots at the thought, so she kept her head down and buried herself in doing her chores perfectly. She would be a dutiful daughter no matter what, even when faced with the excitement of her weekly trip to the market. Normally, Akeem enjoyed the trip. It was a chance to spend time with her beloved father. But today was harder than ever to stay attentive and perfectly behaved. Autumn was approaching, and everyone was preparing for the new Yam Festival. Akeem looked in wonder at the brightly colored foods and fabrics that lined the village square. She smiled at her neighbors as they sang songs and spoke of their hopes for the harvest. Even father, who was usually so prudent, bought a piece of pure white cloth as a gift for mother. The most distracting thing of all, however, was a group of seven girls, all young teens like Akeem, wearing masks and handmade costumes. They were giggling and putting on a small play for themselves. They looked so happy and free, like they always did. Akeem had seen them before, and every time she wanted so much to join them. Today, she almost did. She started walking towards them. When one of them waved, she started walking faster. But then she felt her father grip her hand tightly.
"Stay by my side, Akeem. The world is full of untrustworthy people, and you are too precious for me to lose."
Akeem's heart sank, but she dared not disobey father. She had to be the perfect daughter. So she turned away from the girls and back to the shopping. The seven girls watched Akeem's back. One of them pulled off her mask and turned to the others.
"That girl never wants to play with us. Why?"
Another girl removed her mask and put her hands on her hips.
"She's stuck up, that's why. She thinks she's so beautiful. She doesn't want to wear a mask and hide that pretty little face of hers."
The other girls chimed their agreement. Akeem must think she was better than them. The seven girls grumbled and threw their costumes on the ground. She had ruined their good mood. Now, how would they have fun? But as the girls sat, kicking the dirt, one of them was struck with deadly inspiration.
"I know what would be fun. We should trick Akeem into being our friend, and then we'll punish her for being so vain."
The next day, however, as far as Akeem was concerned, it was her father that was punishing her. He'd gone off with her mother to the festival and demanded she complete an enormous list of chores before she could join them. But the chores would take days. She would never make it to the festival in time. As she pulled weeds in the garden, the sun beating down on her back, she wondered if it was because she'd stepped towards those girls at the market, when suddenly, those very girls peeked over the fence.
"Akeem, there's a festival across the river. Come with us."
Akeem popped up excited, but then she sank back down. She turned her face from the girls, trying to hide her disappointment.
"I can't come with you. I have so much work to do."
The seven girls looked at each other, scheming smiles creeping across their faces.
"We'll help you. Then all of your work will be done and you can come with us."
Working together, the girls were able to finish all of Akeem's chores in just a few hours. Tears began to well in Akeem's eyes, but before she could thank the girls properly, they grabbed her hands and dragged her away from home. Together, the seven girls and Akeem skipped and danced their way to the river. Akeem was laughing like she never had before. She felt warm and strong, and for the first time in a long time, she forgot to worry. When suddenly, the girls took a sharp left where Akeem thought they would take a right.
"Aren't we going to take the bridge across the river?"
The girls exchanged furtive glances, and then one replied,
"The bridge takes so long. We'd have to walk a mile upstream just to walk a mile down. It's much faster to just wade across the water."
Akeem felt instantly uneasy, but she couldn't argue with her new friends. What if they wouldn't like her anymore? Besides, they knew better than she did. She had never traveled this far out of town before. Akeem followed her new friends out into the river. The cold water sent a shiver up her spine, and her feet sank gently into the soft mud below. The water was up to their chests in the middle of the river, but soon all of the girls emerged on the other side. One of them turned to Akeem.
"See? It's perfectly safe to cross this way."
The sky turned a beautiful pink and orange as the girls arrived at the festival. Musicians played for dancing crowds, and huge bowls of food were set out on the long tables. Akeem's eyes grew wide, and the other girls pulled her toward the dance floor. Drums beat electric rhythms, and Akeem's body bobbed and swayed in perfect time. She felt so free. People began to smile warmly and point at her. She heard them whisper, "Who is that beautiful girl?" Young men began to line up, working up the courage to ask her to dance. The other girls flushed red with anger, but they couldn't let Akeem see if their plan was to work. As they did their best to hide their flush with laughter, someone did catch Akeem's hand, and when she looked up, her stomach dropped like a stone. It was her father, and his eyes were bulging with anger.
"What are you doing here, Akeem? I told you that you were not to come."
Akeem's heart began to beat faster than the drums. Her head felt hot. She couldn't meet her father's gaze.
"Actually, you said I couldn't leave until I finished my chores, and my new friends helped me finish them all."
Akeem thought her father's eyes were going to pop out of his head. She had done it. She had lost her father's love. She felt like she was going to throw up, when her father quietly said,
"Go home, Akeem. Your mother and I will speak to you about this tomorrow morning. Just know everything we do, every rule we make, it's for your own good."
Akeem nodded and without a word fled the dance floor. Her seven friends followed her, but then one girl put her arms around Akeem's shoulders and steered her toward the food tables. They couldn't leave without at least trying some of the delicious food. Akeem had no appetite. Her stomach was all in knots. She just wanted to go home, but the girls insisted they at least needed to grab some food to go. Akeem stood by miserably as they filled their pockets and then followed her new friends back to the river. At first, wading through the cold water went just as it had on the way over, but then when all the girls reached the middle of the river, Akeem noticed that her friends were pulling food out of their pockets and tossing it into the current. Confused, she turned to one of them and asked what they were doing. That's when she heard a new tone in her friend's voice, a cold, hard, mocking tone.
"You don't know. You have to make an offering to the water in them or he'll drag you deep beneath the surface."
The current started to swirl around Akeem and the water began to rise. Panic buzzed throughout her head.
"I thought you said it was safe to cross."
The seven girls appeared delighted, with strange, distorted grins on their faces. One of them turned back to Akeem and practically spat.
"I said it was safe to cross that way, but it's not safe to cross back."
Coming up, Akeem faces the wrath of the river.
Hi, it's Vanessa from Parcast. They say there's someone for everyone. A soul to share your secrets with, a companion to grow old with, a conspirator to commit crimes with? Starting this February on Spotify, learn about the lethal and legendary lovers who fought the law in the Parcast limited series, Criminal Couples. If you've ever referred to your best friend or beloved as your partner in crime, this exclusive series is for you. Beginning February 1st, join me for a collection of unlawful love stories from shows across the Parcast network. Discover the extreme beliefs of cult leaders Tony and Susan Alamo, enter Fred and Rose West's real-life House of Horrors, and experience the madness and motives of the San Francisco witch killers. fall for the most famous and feared pairs in history in the Spotify original from Parcast, Criminal Couples. Enjoy two-part episodes every Monday starting February 1st. Follow Criminal Couples free and exclusively on Spotify.
Now back to the story. The cold river started to swirl around Akeem as she stared at the girls she thought were her friends. Blood drained from her face, and after a moment of horrified silence, she did the only thing she could. She pleaded and begged the girls to let her have some of their food so she could make an offering to the Waterton Dem. But the girls just sneered and kept on walking through the calm currents that kissed their thighs, and then their calves, and then their ankles. From the dry land, they turned back and tossed Akeem one last mocking goodbye.
"When there's nothing else, the Endem is happy to eat beauty. And of course, you have plenty of that."
The blue water began to grow dark, and the current swirling around Akeem grew faster, stronger. She was stuck in the middle of the river, with at least 100 feet to each bank. Closing her eyes and praying to Abasi for strength, she tried to take a step, but her foot stuck in the mud. Something seemed to be pulling her down. The water was rising, ruthless and hungry. Akeem thrashed and kicked, but no mortal can match the strength of the River Ndem. Akeem reached one last time for the girls she thought were her friends before disappearing beneath the surface. The seven girls simply watched, and when the water quieted and silence filled the evening air, they began to laugh and walk away. The next morning, mother and father walked home from the festival. They took the bridge across the river, and as they crossed, father took mother's hand and turned to her.
"Do you think I was too harsh with our Akeem? You know I only tried to keep her from the festival because I was trying to protect her. I can't bear the thought of what the jealous, cruel villagers might do to such a gentle, beautiful child."
Mother wrapped her arm around father's and continued walking.
"She is growing up, father. We can't keep her cooped up forever."
They left the river behind them and arrived home sometime later. Father called to Akeem gently. When she did not answer, he sighed. She must be angry with him. But it was not like Akeem to sulk. He and mother went into her room, but she wasn't there either. Father called for Akeem again and again, panic entering his voice. Mother searched every corner of their humble home, and father combed through the garden and the surrounding land, but no Akeem. Hours felt like days, and when the sun was high in the sky, father slammed his hand on the table.
"I cannot wait anymore. Someone must have seen Akeem. Perhaps those girls she was with will know something."
So father ran to town, where he found the seven girls playing in their usual spot. He rushed over to them and breathlessly asked if they had seen Akeem, but they just shrugged their shoulders. Akeem had returned to the village with them, and then they had all gone their separate ways home. Despair wrapped its arms around father's chest, and he used all of his might to bring his head up. He thanked the girls and started to stagger home, but as he went, he was suddenly stopped by a strange, sweet smell. Father turned his head to see the source of the scent. A tent with closed flaps just off the marketplace seemed to be beckoning him. His throat tightened. He knew that tent. It wasn't somewhere he wanted to be called. That never boded well. The tent belonged to the diviner. The diviner was mortal, but he could connect with the gods and spirits. He was powerful and fickle. Consulting the diviner was not to be done lightly, but father was growing desperate. When father stepped inside the tent, he was surprised at the simplicity of the interior. The diviner sat cross-legged on the dirt floor, incense burning around him. There were a few sealed, nondescript boxes scattered around the space, and not much else. The diviner looked up at father and asked why he had come to visit, and father,
tears clouding his eyes, sank to his knees like a stone. "Please, sir, my daughter is missing. She is the best thing in my life. Help me find her."
The diviner simply held up his hand. Father bowed his head, and the diviner reached into one of his boxes. He pulled out a small cup. He shook the cup and released a handful of stones and trinkets onto the ground. The diviner studied the display for several minutes and then broke the silence.
"Your daughter has been taken by the Water Ndem. She did not give him an offering when she crossed back through the river."
Father dug his nails into the dirt underneath him. He had never warned Akeem of the Water Ndem. He had never thought she would travel to the river without him. All this time, he thought he was protecting her from the world, but what he'd really done was make her ignorant of it. Teardrops streamed off his face and wet the ground beneath him. He began to shake.
"Is there no way for me to get her back?"
Then, to Father's shock, the diviner nodded. There was a way.
"You must bring the Water Ndem a goat, a basket of eggs, and a piece of pure white cloth."
Father clenched his teeth tight. He had only one goat, and they needed her for milk. They had a few hens, so a basket of eggs would be most of what they had saved, and the only piece of pure white cloth they owned was a gift he had just given to Mother. The diviner seemed to read his mind.
"You may not have much, but if your daughter is everything to you, then you must give everything to get her back."
Father stared into the diviner's eyes. He thought for a moment the man would say one last thing, but the old man remained silent, and Father gave a decisive nod. Of course, it was only right. The exchange had to be equal. Resolve filled his drooping body. He thanked the diviner, and then he ran from the tent. It was time to bring his daughter back from her watery grave. First, Father returned home to collect the offering. Mother ran to the door when he arrived and asked him what he had learned. He replied very shortly that he had found Akeem and that he must make an offering. Mother could see the determination in his eyes, so she did not question him further. She simply helped him collect eggs and wrangle the goat. A small sadness broke through his resolve as he asked Mother for the piece of white cloth.
"I'm sorry, Mother. I know it was a gift, but I must take it back."
But Mother just cupped Father's face in her hands and kissed him.
"Our daughter, our family, is the most precious gift you have given me. There is nothing I wouldn't give if it helps get her back."
Father took his offerings down to the river. He waded out into the cold water. First, he held out the goat, and she swiftly sank beneath the surface. Next, he let go of the basket of eggs, and that too disappeared. Finally, he kissed the pure white cloth and watched it sink. A brief moment passed and the current began to shift. The river swirled around Father, and then a stream of water exploded into the air. He heard an anguished yell, and then he saw her, 10 feet in the air, trapped at the top of the spray, Akeem. The river dropped the girl into her father's arms, where, shaking and sobbing, she gasped out,
"I'm sorry, Father. Those girls, you were right. I should never have trusted strangers."
Akeem, exhausted, fell still. Her breath was shallow, but she was breathing. And as darkness took over the sky, Father carried her home. But as he walked through the quiet darkness, his relief slowly started to shift. The pieces began to click into place. Those girls. Father's face fell numb, and his skin turned to ice. When he arrived home, he gently shifted Akeem into her joyful mother's arms, and then, to Mother's confusion, he announced in soft, menacing tones,
"We must throw a party to celebrate our daughter's return and invite all her little friends."
Next, the family takes their revenge on the 7 girls. Now, back to the story.
Later that night, Mother tossed and turned, anxious about her quietly sleeping daughter and wondering what her husband was up to. She suddenly woke up to discover that Father was not next to her. Sounds of his grunting and heavy breathing came from the other room, so she got up to investigate. There, lit by moonlight, she found her husband digging a large hole in their living room. When she asked what he was doing, he responded, "I'm avenging our daughter. My love, will you help me?" Mother studied him very seriously. There was a kind of desperation in his eyes, a cold anger she had not seen before. She opened her mouth to say no, but then she saw something familiar. Beneath the cloud of malice was the same compassion and love that had shone on her for 12 years of marriage. After a moment of silent struggle, she nodded her head and picked up a shovel. Together, Mother and Father finished digging the pit. Then they collected branches, sharpened the ends, and placed them upright in the hole. Next, they gathered dry brush and threw that in as well. Finally, they covered the pit with a rug. The sun began to rise as they finished their work. Father turned to Mother and told her, "Keep the fire burning. I'm going to go invite our guests for tonight." He kissed Mother on the cheek and left. She put her head in her hands. Through his furious exclamations as they worked, she thought she understood his boiling rage and the revenge he had in mind, and she didn't think she had the stomach for it. She loved her husband more than anything, except her daughter, and trusted him. But surely there was a better way. Her thoughts were interrupted by Akeem's voice. Mother went to her daughter's bedroom. She still looked weak, but she was sitting up, and her eyes were alert. Taking her mother's hands, she whispered softly, despairingly, "People are so cruel, Mother." Mother stroked her daughter's hair. "Not all people are cruel. We should apologize to you for never teaching you how to discern for yourself. Your father and I only ever wanted to protect you." The two women held each other for some time. Finally, with a soft resolve as steely as her husband's, Mother said, "If you're feeling up for it, come help me in the kitchen. We're going to get back at the people who hurt you." After a moment of surprised silence, the sadness in Akeem's eyes hardened. She nodded, and gathering her strength, she stood up to help her mother. When the sky turned purple and orange with dusk, Father returned with the seven girls and their parents. Mother and Akeem had prepared a small feast for the guests. The girls turned white with shock at seeing Akeem. She gave them a small smile that did not reach her eyes. Mother gripped her daughter's hand tight, and Father encouraged everyone to come further in the house.
"Come in, come in. It is truly a blessing to have our precious Akeem safely back with us. I know that her friends love to put on little plays, and I hoped they might grace us with a performance on this special occasion. Here, you can use the living room as your stage."
Father gestured to the rug he and Mother had laid across the floor. The girls exchanged nervous glances. They turned to face their parents, who were all smiles, saying, "Go, go!" The girls held hands and slowly made their way to the makeshift stage. When the first few girls reached the rug, it collapsed underneath them. They screamed and clawed at the others for support, but like a chain, they pulled their friends down with them. As each girl landed, the sharpened branches pierced through her skin, some through the legs, some through the heart and lungs. Blood splattered, filling the trench like a terrible bath. Some of the girls' parents rushed forward, reaching out to their daughters, but before they could grab the flailing limbs, Father scooped hot embers from the fireplace and tossed them down in the pit. The dry brush lit in a flash, and screams filled the house like a thunderclap. Thrashing through the smoke and smell of burning flesh, the seven girls' parents ran, shouting down the road. But Akeem, her mother and father, simply stood looking at the grisly scene.
Together, they watched the bright orange flames climb until they ran out of fuel, until there was nothing but black, charred ash in the pit below. An hour later, the party guests returned with several other townsfolk. Father opened the door and met the angry crowd with utter calm.
"Stop your yelling, please. My wife and daughter have already gone to bed."
The crowd did fall silent, but not because of his words. The people made a path, and Father bowed quickly when he saw who was approaching. The head Amama, leader of their village, walked up to Father's doorway. He was a stout man, but his presence loomed large. Under his stony gaze, Father's violent resolve seemed to shrivel.
"I am told you have killed 7 of our children. Why, may I ask, have you committed such an abominable act?"
Father quietly offered a reply, stammering a bit, but determined. He explained how his daughter had been cruelly tricked by the 7 girls, how the Water Ndem had taken her. He said the diviner could act as his witness. The Amama struck the ground with his cane.
"If the diviner can speak in your favor, then let him be brought before me."
A few villagers ran off to find him. Mother, woken by the noise, came to Father's side. She grabbed his hand as a tense stillness filled the air. She felt the wrath of the other villagers as they stared daggers at the couple, but no one dared to act out in front of the Amama. Eventually, the diviner hobbled up to the crowd, and in his raspy voice, he spoke.
"What this man said is true. I cast lots to learn the fate of his daughter. I then told him what it would take to get her back. He gave what little he had for his precious girl."
The Amama opened his mouth to speak, but the diviner continued.
"What more, the lots told me that the 7 girls meant to kill Akeem. I kept this from him. I did not wish to stoke the flames of his vengeance, but it seems he learned the truth on his own."
The crowd erupted in whispers, which grew louder and louder, but the Amama once again called order.
"Your daughter was wronged by these girls, that much is clear. But you should not have taken 7 lives as revenge for 1. The only way to make this right is to throw your daughter back into the river."
Mother's eyes went wide. She looked at Father, who had gone still as stone. She tried to protest, but she was drowned out by the crowd's shouting. They pushed past her and Father and went into the house. They stormed into Akeem's room and dragged her from her bed. Mother screamed and tried to pull them away, but more townsfolk pinned her and Father to the ground. Akeem herself kicked and scratched, but she could not break free. The little daughter of spring was dragged, helpless, from the home. Before she was taken far, however, the Amama held out his hand. The crowd froze in place, and the Amama walked up to Akeem. He carefully studied her face. Then he turned to her parents.
"This is your daughter?"
Mother and father exchanged a confused, sad look and then nodded. The Amama, after another endless moment of quiet, spun around to face the crowd, speaking thoughtfully.
"I understand now. This young girl is as beautiful as springtime itself. Even now, in distress, her grace shines through. She is worth more than 7 children combined. Her family is justified in their vengeance."
The other parents protested loudly, but the Amama would hear none of it.
"All of you go! Leave these people in peace! You may mourn the loss of your daughters, but if you are looking for someone to hold responsible, perhaps you should blame yourselves for raising jealous, cruel children."
Slowly, the townsfolk began to disperse. Some grumbled, some wept, but they could not go against the Amama's word. All the villagers disappeared into the night, and Father carried his daughter back to her bed. Mother followed, and together they tucked Akeem in tightly. As their daughter slept, they filled the pit in the living room. They covered the charred bones of the girls and smoothed over the dirt. By the time they finished, the sky was turning a pale yellow. Mother admired Father as he put the shovels away. She took a bit of her dress and wiped the sweat from his face. He took her hand and said,
"I am truly blessed."
Mother laughed and kissed him.
"We are blessed."
Then the pair lay down in their bed. Mother held Father close, listening to the reassuring rhythm of his breath. Her family was safe. Those cruel children were gone. Justice had been served. She slept more soundly than she had in years. At the end of Daryl's version of The Pretty Girl and the Seven Jealous Women, he directly spells out a moral. Never kill a man or woman if you're envious of their beauty, as if you do, you will surely be punished. While this is without a doubt one aspect of the story, it would be overly simplistic to chalk the whole tale up to a warning against jealousy. In fact, what's more interesting about the narrative may be its dissonance. The seven girls are envious of Akeem's beauty, but they also mistake her lack of play for arrogance. Akeem is too trusting of the girls, but she's naive because her parents did not teach her about the outside world. Father gets his vengeance, but his overprotection is what made it possible for the girls to trick his daughter in the first place. Akeem is punished for her beauty, but it is also what saves her. Rather than settling for a simple, if somewhat severe, moral, the story may be more fairly understood as a window into ancient Ibibio society. We see how women's bodies can be a boon or a weapon used against them, how the people interact with nature and their spirituality, how they grieve, and ultimately how justice is inevitably, and sometimes harshly, doled out. The Pretty Girl and the Seven Jealous Women is a story as complex, layered, and contradictory as human society itself. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back on Wednesday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Nick Johnson, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Aaron Larson. This episode of Tales was written by Joseph Bricker, with writing assistance by Nora Battelle, fact-checking by Cheyenne Lopez, and research by Mickey Taylor. I'm Vanessa Richardson.
Hi, it's Vanessa again. Before you go, don't forget to check out the new Parcast limited series, Criminal Couples. From apocalyptic cult leaders to bank-robbing bandits to married mafiosos, these couples give new meaning to Till Death Do Us Part. Enjoy two-part episodes every Monday starting February 1st. Follow Criminal Couples free and exclusively on Spotify.